Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
You're listening to a man whose work is never done.
In a job like yours, even when it's finished, there's always one more thing to do.
And his job is to make your job easier.
It's a very difficult job, and the only way to get through it is we all work together as a team. And that means you do everything I say.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for staying with us today. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. I'm excited about Ted Fishman being on the show, ladies and gentlemen. Ted's the author of China Inc. And before he wrote this book, though, he was and still is a veteran financial and economic journalist. He worked, many of you have seen his bylines in the New York Times and in Harper's and USA Today, et cetera, et cetera. He also has been a commentator for public radio. He ran his own investment firm in Chicago, working at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. And now he's the author of this outstanding book on China. Ted, welcome to the show.
Oh, glad to be on. Thank you, Jim.
It's good to have you here, Ted. I'm so excited about your book because I think your book is going to it's going to be more than just a wake-up call. A wake-up call sounds like it's a slap across the face, and I think it's going to do some of that. But I also think it's going to educate a lot of people about the realities, not the myths. I think you're dispelling a lot of the myths, but also about the realities about China and what China is going, the role that China is going to play in our lives, especially American lives, over the next several generations.
I don't like wake up call either. I think of it as kind of a traveler's journey through our future, because our future is going to feel very much more Chinese than it does today.
Ted, and again, even though I don't like the word, the thing is, though, is there are plenty of people out there who are either naive or in denial or just uninformed, and what you just said is a wake up call.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I'm happy to wake people up, because when I go around the country, things that, because I've been working on the book for 2 years, seem very commonplace to me is extremely new information
right.
to people.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And when
you're so close to it that things that you have just taken in stride is revolutionary information to most folks.
Well, even just describing what happened, telling somebody what they ought to be looking at when they travel through the aisles of Walmart is quite eye-opening to most people.
Right.
That you look around and 7 of the 10 of the things you see in aisle 8 through 20 are from China. And, it's quite amazing. And so what happened to me when I was writing the book was, once I had China on the mind, I saw China everywhere, in my drawers, in my closet, in my kids' game chests. And I'm afraid when I talk to people about it, that they start seeing the world the same way.
Well, a lot of people in America, especially, when they think of China, they feel a little bit of fear. They feel a little bit of anger. They feel a little bit of jealousy. Because China represents now, for many industries, what Mexico and Guatemala has represented to the textile, the people who worked in the textile industries, over the last few years, doesn't it?
Well, the worst thing we can do is have those emotions, because we will get nowhere by demonizing China. All of the keys to our future exist within ourselves and how we play our economic game.
Well said.
And what we need to be a vibrant world economy is to be the sharpest economy we can be, have the best workers that we can muster, and make sure our kids are prepared for a very global future.
Right. Educated for 21st century jobs, and educated to understand that we do live in a global economy. Ted, one of the things that I have been saying for a while is that, along the lines of what you were just saying, is that we're never going to be able to be competitive against anybody in the global marketplace of the 21st century if we think of ourselves as victims.
Oh, that's exactly right. You know, first of all, there's two ways to think of that. One is as a people. You know, as a people, are we willing to use our power to create a fair environment for trade so that the United States gets paid for the great products that we make? There's no reason why the United States can't thrive with China. You know, Japan and Germany have trade surpluses with China, or, you know, they have very balanced trade with China, and China is one of their biggest trading partners. The United States has a $170 billion trade deficit with China. The reason for that is because we have a different style economy.
We're a consumer economy.
We're a consumer economy, and the things that we make are knowledge products, which are not things. You know, Japan and Germany could sell China things. We sell China ideas that exist in the form of patented drugs and so on.
Right.
Those are harder to get paid for.
Exactly, and easier to knock off. Ted, stand by. We're going to take a quick break. It's 2010. When we come back, we're going to go over into China and find out a little bit what's going on over there, including the economic situation over there. It's 2010. We'll be right back with Ted Fishman, the author of China Inc. We're back. It's 17-till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our new friend, Ted Fishman, the author of China, Inc. Ted, have you got a website?
Yeah, it's China, Inc., I-N-C, ChinaInc-book.com. And there's an email address there that's linked there that if people want to share their experiences and how they've thrived or been challenged by China, I'd love to hear them.
Or if they want to disagree with you, you'll take those too, won't you?
Well, I prefer it. If they want to disagree with me, please, by all means.
By all means, send those. That's exactly what I say. Ted, China apparently, at least the numbers I've seen, is that not only is China's economy growing at 9%, but that's been year over year now for some time, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah, for around 20 years. You know, China's economy has doubled, and then doubled again.
It's
the fastest growing economy ever.
But it's still a fifth or less the size of the United States. So if it's been growing at 9% for the last 20 years, that'll give you an idea about how bad it was 20 years ago.
Oh, it's astounding. You know, per capita income in China has gone up fourfold. It was not unusual before the period of market reform for people to make under $70 a year.
And
now in China's cities, you know, they have a pretty good middle class income.
What did I hear the other day that it was there were like 300 million middle class Chinese?
Yeah, well, they're on their way to 300 million.
Just the middle class.
Just the middle class is, you know, the size of the United States. So
right.
That means they'll be very interested in washing machines, cars, and all the things that bring a better life.
Well, and you know, Ted, when I think of 1.2 billion Chinese, I think that's the number, around that number. A lot of people think of that as that many, you know, competitors making our garments and our washing machines and things like that. But I really think if you're in business, if you're in the marketplace in the United States, you really need to focus on them as customers, 1.2 billion customers.
Well, for American businesses, part of the dynamic that is pulling businesses to China, American businesses live in a quite mature market, and for Fortune 500 companies to grow, it's very difficult to grow in Japan, Europe, or the United States. But China has all of this new wealth. And Jeffrey Immelt, the head of GE, was in Chicago talking to a crowd of CEOs the other day, and he said that China is the place where big companies are going to get their growth, and they ought to focus on it, and it has your view exactly. And it is that, you know, that lure which is working its way through American industry, you know, not just moving manufacturing over there, but also moving marketing operations, intellectual property. It's very hard to go to a large law firm in the United States and not find that they have two or three offices in China.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I want to come back to something we mentioned a minute ago about victimization. Lou Dobbs, in my opinion, has been dangerous for the last year talking about the outsourcing of America and everything, because he tries to make Americans feel as if we should feel like victims. At least that's the result that
I get. Yeah, you know, I have to give Lou Dobbs credit in one respect, is that he's describing a fact about American industry, that a lot of it is migrating overseas or looking for ways to compete in a global marketplace. Where he falls short is in not comprehending the dynamic that's pushing
right.
them there. And if you just talk about the fact that they're moving without understanding the dynamic, then you're not giving people credit for finding the solutions. It's not really an issue of patriotism. If your competitor is finding a Chinese solution for his business, what are you going to do sitting at home without a Chinese solution for your business?
Mm-hmm.
What you will do is fail.
Right.
And the thing that we all have to figure out is how, with China's growth, do we become sharper? Do we leverage our management skills? Do we leverage the unique qualities of our companies? You know, for most small and mid-sized companies, the thing that they own is a terrific idea. And that is the capital that
most small companies have. Well, see, that's what I say. The way I say that is that globalization, which China is clearly a big part of that, is the trade manifestation of our intellectual property journey, of our intellect. And what I think Lou Dobbs does is he fails to take, as you say, to take that into consideration, I think Lou Dobbs would be, if this were 100 years ago, he'd be lobbying for the buggy whip manufacturers, and the other thing that happens, I fear, is that the average American worker, who may be displaced by things that are going on with globalization, instead of saying to themselves, I need to be retooled, I think he and others are causing them to say, I've become a victim of this, and so, this is not fair. These people are being mean to me, instead of saying, you know what, this is reality, and I better get retooled and retrained for a 21st century job in America.
Well, you know, sometimes a little fear is a good thing. We had an enormous amount of fear when Japan was growing quite strong industrially
right.
in the 1970s. And now people say, oh, we shouldn't have been afraid because, you know, what's Japan now? You know, well, Japan's a pretty terrific place now, it turns out. They have a higher
percentage. It's still a second economy, even though it's not doing very well.
Yes, second economy. People there live longer than we do. They are higher per capita incomes than we have, if you measure it in certain ways. They're going to have the largest automobile company in Toyota. But, you know, American industry did find an answer to Japan, and I think one reason we found the answer is because we had this fear. You know, fear made us smarter.
Right.
And, you know, if Lou Dobbs is giving a little dose of fear but not making us panic too much, then maybe he's going to make us smarter.
Well, maybe so, but the main thing we can't do in America is feel like victims. Any time we spend as victims is time we spend being uncompetitive. And we're going to take a quick break, Ted. When we come back, I want to ask you about the capital markets in China. I wonder if one of the chinks in the armor of China, all this growth, is going to be their ability to develop and to manage efficient capital markets. And that's what we have in America that works really well. And we're going to talk about that right after these messages with Ted Fishman, the author of China, Inc. Back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, having a great visit with our new friend Ted Fishman. Ladies and gentlemen, the book is called China, Inc. The website is chinainc-book.com. Is that right, Ted?
Yep.
Folks, I encourage you to buy this book and read it with your children. This is a very important book for our future. It'll put so many things in perspective for you. It'll dispel a lot of the myths. It'll introduce some new ideas that you hadn't thought about. And hopefully, Ted, one of the things I hope will happen from your book is that a lot of small business owners will read it and they'll see opportunities for themselves and they won't think of themselves as a victim.
Yeah, well, that's what all businesses need to do now, because unless you have a China solution, you may not have a business. You know, there are certain businesses that will be local forever if you're in the restaurant business or if you're in a
dry
local
cleaning
service
or,
business.
Yeah.
But if you're making things to sell things in this world, it is very unlikely that you don't have a Chinese competitor, and it's very unlikely that you don't have a potential Chinese partner.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to find those things. It's not cheap for small businesses to go over to China. But what local communities are doing to help their businesses do this is just astonishing. I was just giving a talk in Milwaukee, and I was talking to the head of the Milwaukee Chamber of Commerce, which has 3,000 businesses as members, most of them not Fortune 500 businesses, obviously. And he goes to China with a group of 30 or more local businesses every 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the head of the Chamber of Commerce. China is such a high priority for his constituents.
Well, you know, we also have as a part of the Department of Commerce, the U.S. Commercial Services.
Right.
They're all over the country. They will help you pull together opportunities all over the world, not just in China, but also in China. Ted, I want to move over and talk about their capital markets.
Sure.
Now, that seems to be the chink in their armor. And if anything holds them back, it seems to me, it's a poorly developed and inefficient capital market. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the more fascinating things that I got to explore in the book was the unofficial capital market in China. You know, there is the official capital market because the big banks are all state-owned and they lend to these giant state-owned industries.
And they do they don't do that so well either, do they?
No, it's bad banks lending to bad businesses, basically, with the, you know, huge
portfolios. Which is basically why Japan has been in the doldrums for 15 years.
Yeah, and China's even worse. I mean, whatever Japan's banks did wrong, China's banks have done it 10 times worse.
Wow.
It's part of China's economic miracle because a lot of companies have gotten free money, in essence, from banks that don't really demand that they pay it back.
Right.
And it's very hard to compete against companies that operate on free money.
That's exactly right.
In China now there are, so the banks lend to businesses that are connected to the state in one way or another. But China, interestingly enough, has 85 million private businesses. You know, the United States, by comparison, has 26 million private businesses.
Say those numbers again.
Okay, the United States has 26 million private businesses. And China, which had no businesses that were private 20 years ago, zero, in a country where the country used to own the land under your feet and the utensils in your kitchen, now has 85 million private businesses.
Wow.
And they
that's a wake up call right there.
They have raised money privately through what is in essence an entirely illegal but parallel banking system, which is very, very efficient. And when we talk about China's, you know, financial integrity, we don't even include the money networks that have funded, you know, these millions and millions of new businesses.
Well, are those organized, and are they going to pop up and become legal one day, or what's going to
happen? You know, it's interesting. You know, if you are one of, you know, the 300 million people who is trying to leave a Chinese farm or a village and come to a Chinese city, you need money. And in order to get that money to start the business you want to run in the city, for instance, you have to go to your village moneylender. And your village moneylender is a kind of money manager for the other farmers in the village who have entrusted him with their pennies. And you get a grub stake to go to a city. And they act like banks, and often they look like banks, and sometimes they even have teller windows, and they're utterly illegal. You know, they don't exactly enforce their collections the way a bank would. You know, they enforce their collections more like the Sopranos might.
Right, right.
But it's very efficient.
Ted, this is fascinating, and I have 100 more questions to ask you. Will you come back again real soon and
I would be so delighted to. Yeah, of course, there's no small questions when China's concerned. So.
Exactly. Thank you. Good work on the book. Thank you for bringing it to us, and we're looking forward to talking to you about it again in the future.
Thank you, Jim.
Ted Fishman, ladies and gentlemen, that's ChinaInc-book.com, and don't forget the book's available wherever books are sold. I hope you'll check it out. It's a very important book. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.